Hi, this is Teddy Weber from Tin Hat Cider in Warren, Vermont, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode number 80.
Going up, going up.
Tin Hat Cider.
Going up, going up.
Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, I am stoked to bring to you a walkabout in the orchard with Teddy Weber of Tin Hat Cider in Vermont. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment. Welcome back to all the regular listeners out there in Ciderville. I always appreciate you coming back each week and hanging out with me, both in the orchard this week with Teddy Weber and out there around the world at all the amazing places that we get to touch down and sometimes sip a little bit of their cider and chit-chat. That's just the best. And if you're a new listener to Cider Chat, well, welcome aboard this ride. Sometimes I refer to it as a slow-moving train. You want to just hop on and enjoy the cruise. And we indeed cruise around all over the landscape. If you're new to this podcast, you should know that there are over, well, with this one, 80 episodes. And that's a whole lot of cider fun. With chats with makers both from the U.S. and countries around the world, such as Estonia, Poland, Australia, Japan, Chile, Canada, Portugal, Spain, particularly in Asturias and the U.K. There's both cider-making techniques that we discuss. You might want to check out the podcast episode number 6 with Paul Zacco. That was one of my early podcasts that I posted, and Paul is just an amazing guy. Back when cider wasn't really a hot ticket, you know, to fame and stardom that it is now, and so popular in the world, Paul was making cider. He actually has a homebrew shop in Connecticut, and he won Cider Maker of the Year 12 times in a row. So he has a lot of thoughts about cider. And then another great cider making technique is with Neil Worley, and he is based in the UK. And that is episode number 26. And we talk about a particular technique called keeving that is used extensively both in the UK and in France. It's a wonderful chat. And then there's cider cocktails with Darlene Hayes. She's based out in California and wrote a book on making cocktails with cider. And there's a fine chat number 13 with Ryle Schallenberger from Northwest Mobile Juicing. I was pretty excited when I got to speak to Ryle because he has a trailer that he pulls along, goes right into the orchard, and is able to do on-site mobile juicing. Also deals with other fruits too, so if it's cherries, it's kind of like deep pitting. And this is a crazy cool concept where you could have a mobile juicer. So you could find out a little bit about that if that's your thing, if you're an orchardist or cider maker looking to figure that out. And then if you just want to kind of sing some Apple songs, I highly recommend episode number 55, Apple Songs Sing Along. That was just a fun time. Oh, there's a kitty cat. Boy cat, you step back now. We're doing a podcast, buddy. Now I'm going to send you down to the cider house. Hang on, folks. Hey, Palms, are you in the cider house? Boycat and I are coming in, and he's just making a little bit of noise while I'm recording this podcast. Are you there?
We're in here, Rhea. Come on, Boycat. Come on, kitty cat.
Thanks, Palms. He's a little noisy. And hey, what are you doing? Those are some nice pictures there.
We're looking at some photos that our friend Sharon sent along of my cousin down the road. It's a beautiful quince, an ornamental quince, but a quince nonetheless. Would you like to take a look at a few more?
Wow, that red is brilliant. It's like a fuchsia color. Really stunning. I'm going to go take a walk down there later today. You guys want to come along?
We'd love to.
Oh, where's Perry? I don't see him in here.
Well, it being May and time for all the blossoms to be coming out, Perry is walking out in the orchard right now taking photos of some of the Perry pears that are now currently almost in full bloom.
Well, that's cool. And in the meanwhile, how about if we post that photo of the quince up in the show notes this week? I think Ciderville would really enjoy seeing that. And maybe some other folks out there in Ciderville might like to post some photos of their own quinces and medlars and peri pears as they come in. What do you think about that, Poms?
I'll send this photo of the quince to your email address. It's ria@ciderchat.com, right?
You bet, medlars, and I'd appreciate that. Now I'm going to get back to the show. See you guys later, and thanks for taking care of Boy Cat.
You bet, Ria. Bye-bye.
Well, as I was saying before Boy Cat interrupted us, that there are quite a few podcast episodes. And there are also the Talking Poms. And I really don't know what I would do without them. They just kind of keep the Cider House and my spot in Ciderville pretty darn entertaining. So I hope you enjoy getting to know the Medlars, Mr. Quince, and Perry Pear. And Apple was here on one episode, but you know, Apple is pretty darn busy. So we hope that Apple will be coming back soon. You just don't know when that Apple's going to be dropping it. In the meanwhile, I'd like to make an announcement now that next week's podcast is going to be with the Gypsy Cider Company in Tennessee. And I'm super excited to announce that we're going to have a little bit of a giveaway. This isn't a swag contest. This is going to be two tickets to the Cider Circus at Copper Mountain out in Colorado. And that weekend is August 25th and 26th. And it's going to be two sets of tickets. And it's for what is called the first pour. There'll be more detail on it, but it's going to be really easy to enter this giveaway. I don't quite have the page set up on Cider Chat yet, but it should be up there by next week. In the meanwhile, if you want to get in on this giveaway for the Cider Circus, all you need to do is subscribe to the eCider News at ciderchat.com. You'll see it right there on the main page, and there'll also be a link at the show notes. It's pretty super easy, and if you're already subscribed to eCider News, well, you are all set. And of course, if you are a patron of Cider Chat, you are automatically entered. You too can become a patron by going to a Cider Chat's Patreon page. There'll be also a link to that in the show notes. Every time there is a swag or giveaway, all the patrons are automatically entered. Win, win, win in Ciderville, and that is the way we roll. Speaking of rolling, it's about time that we rolled right into this main chat with Teddy Weber of Tin Hat Cider in Vermont. Back in April of 2016, Teddy had sent me an email, and he wrote that he's been enjoying the podcast and told me a little bit about his work, pruning trees, spreading compost, grafting, taking gravity readings, racking, bottling, stacking, cleaning, scrubbing, and tasting, and mentioned that Cider Chat helped him keep connected to the larger cider world from his little mountain outpost. And I suspect some of you out there in Ciderville might have that same kind of experience, and I'm really glad to hear how Cider Chat keeps you connected. Teddy also invited me in that same email to come on up to Vermont sometime, and he said that he is a small commercial producer, and he's been rejuvenating an old orchard with over 40 varieties, including pears, and that the orchard sits on a historic old farm with sweeping mountain views. He also forages for wild apples and even maintains some wild apple groves. And that spring of last year, he was grafting wild apples that he believes will have some promise as cider apples. So you could imagine that email really caught my eye. And I replied, yes. In fact, I even talked about this on some previous episodes when I was heading up last April on my Vermont cider tour. Well, on that tour, I did indeed stop and speak with Teddy, and this chat has been sitting waiting to come to you this week. It's a lovely walkabout on that old historic orchard where he's been rejuvenating those of 40 varieties. And we talk a lot about apples and some of the critters that come and visit. There'll be a photo of Teddy at the show notes for this episode 80, and also one or two of the trees with the critter marks right there, along with that photo of the quince that I was looking at earlier with the talking palms. So in the meanwhile, let's all now grab a glass and head up to Vermont and have a chat with Teddy Weber of Tin Hat Cider.
I think I found your podcast, I don't know, I want to say in the fall.
Yeah.
And I have, my radio doesn't work in my truck, and every now and then I have to do a long drive, and I would like recently discovered I was listening to podcasts on permaculture, and then I was like, I wonder if there's anything on cider, and I just typed in cider, and there you were, and I was like, whoa, cool, and I downloaded all these.
Yeah. Here I am up in, this is Waitsfield, Vermont. Let's talk about Tin Hat, what you're doing, and this, like, little orchard here.
Yep.
On this lovely hillside. I'm going to just kind of narrate for Sarderville, too. We're, like, you know, looking out across that Mad River.
That is Mount Ellen, which is part of Sugarbush, and then Mad River Glen's right there.
Okay.
Mad River Glen's pretty much out of snow right now, but we still have some white up there. In fact, I just skied yesterday.
And this, like, beautiful, picture-perfect Vermont farm there with that little cupola and the weather vane.
And you'll see, we'll get an even better view up here.
Oh, awesome.
But, yeah, I'm very fortunate. I ended up in this area about 5 years ago, and basically was going through some life changes and had this harebrained idea that I wanted to do something with cider, but I didn't have an orchard, and I wasn't interested in buying apples and going that route of buying fruit. And I just have a sort of a gardening outdoors kind of background, and I just have thought all along that if I was going to do something with cider, I wanted to be able to control it from the growing end of things. And I befriended Sue and Gibb, the owners here, and I didn't even know there was an orchard here. And it had basically been unmanaged for over a decade at that point. They were busy doing other things. The orchard was here when they purchased it, so it was just sort of a side note to the farm.
Wow.
And yeah, you'll see there's more all the way over there. We can walk over there. But you know, I was literally helping out Gibb one day do some chores around the barn, and he was saying, well, what's next for you, you know? And I started sort of blabbing about this idea to do something with cider, and he said, well, you know, we got over 200 trees here. I'd be great to see somebody do something with that. I said, are you kidding me? Like, I had seen you know, the 5 or 6 trees down here, and I just never really looked up the hill further. And I think within a few days, I was over here pruning and pulling off old trunk guards and pulling Virginia creeper out of some of the trees. And so it was it's an odd orchard. It was not planted to be. Yeah, let's keep walking. It was not planted to be a commercial orchard in the sense of the blocks aren't laid out by variety. It's total mishmash. I haven't been able to make a whole lot of sense other than pollination. The pollination has been laid out very well.
What haven't you made sense of? Do you know what the different varieties are?
In fact, we can, there's a few blocks here and there where there's some consistency, but just to give you an idea, going right up this row, that is marked as an atlas, but it's not. It's some mysterious crab. Most likely the atlas got knocked off at a young age, and the rootstock just sent up a runner, and because the orchard was basically being unmanaged, it grew into that, which is actually a pretty nice looking tree. Actually has some tannin to it, this oddball little green apple, so I've just been keeping it in the mix.
And well, crab apples are really popular in that way, you know?
Yep. This is a Northwest Greening right here. And that's a cur beyond that cur crab,
mm-hmm.
which I've also been tinkering around with for cider.
But what's the history of this orchard?
Planted in 92 and 93.
Huh.
And, well, here, just real quick. So
yeah,
this is, and I'll tell you more about it later. This is called a berry red. That's a honey gold, Scott Winter, golden russet, Spartan, Dolgo crab. And then all the way up on the end is a Lodi. But
wow.
Just to give you an idea,
wow.
there's 40 varieties. There's over 40 varieties, and that's not including wild apples. There's actually wild seedlings in the rows. So apparently the original owner here who put this orchard in wanted a cider orchard, whether that's sweet cider or hard cider, I don't really know. In 92, you know, Steve Wood was the only one who knew who was getting actual French and English cider apples, to my knowledge, in this part of the country. Mm-hmm. So if somebody had an idea to do something with cider, one thing that's interesting is there's a steady supply of apples here from August to freeze,
mm-hmm.
end of October, mm-hmm. basically. So, like, there's a lot of some. There's Tatowski, Yellow Transparent, Red Ostrakhan.
Mm-hmm.
These are all August and early September apples.
Mm-hmm.
Duchess of Oldenburg down here.
Wow, what a diversity.
Yeah. You know, it's been exciting and fun, but it's also been challenging to figure out. You know, I had some cider experience at the carboy level, but I dove into this
100%.
Without really knowing what I was getting into.
Good.
And I just went for it. And I'm still, and probably will for years, have a forest of 1 gallon and 5 gallon experiment.
Mm-hmm.
For me, you know, whereas a lot of cider makers are playing around with hops and fruit and yeasts, I'm keeping everything pretty simple in the cidery because I've got so many different kinds of apples. So I'm just focused on fruit. And what I can do out here in the orchard in terms of, you know, how I'm pruning and how I'm harvesting and when I harvest and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But some of these apples, like, for example, are you familiar with the Red Ostrakhan?
No, I'm not.
This is the one that I'm kind of, I don't want to say excited, but, you know, I've just been kind of curious about. So Red Ostrakhan, Yellow Transparent, Lodi, even Duchess of Oldenburg, they're all summer apples. And, you know, I had never tried to make cider with summer apples, but I had heard and read in all of the books that we get that, well, summer apples are generally not good for cider. So I didn't even bother my first year. I fermented some of them. I basically, you know, a lot of them went to a pig farm right down the road.
Interesting.
And then I thought, wait a minute, these trees are producing a lot. If I'm not going to top work them, why am I just going to cart these up? Why don't I at least just ferment some of them and see what happens? Maybe I can at least make a good vinegar with them, which they do make actually excellent vinegar,
mm-hmm.
which is now part of what I'm doing, lo and behold. But the Red Ostrakhan, to my surprise, makes a halfway decent cider. It actually has some nice astringency to it, a little bit of tannin in there. And so it's an old Russian apple. I think it was brought over via Switzerland, England, ended up here, I'm not sure when, but it goes way back. It was popular for a while. And so that's one that, you know, I'm not going to top work or plant a bunch more of them, but there's 6 pretty large trees in this orchard that produce annually and quite a bit. So why not just, it's a funky little apple, just keep using it? That's been my philosophy.
Now, I want to back up here a little bit. What is your background that you might know so much about apples? And are you, you know, you are now an orchardist, obviously, but how did this catch your fancy and put you here? What's your background?
My background is...
And maybe it doesn't matter, but...
Yeah, my background is what got me into this is really two things. I was a musician for over 10 years touring and recording and mm-hmm. got to travel quite a bit. And for about 7 years in a row, I went to England. once a year. And that was sort of my, even though there, you know, there was Farnham Hill in West County here in New England. I'm talking, what are we, 2016? So this would have been like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I was kind of oblivious that cider was picking up. You know, I was still.
Sure. Like a lot of people.
Yeah. I drank mm-hmm. craft beer and mm-hmm. we'd go to England and, you know, of course I'd be into the ales, but all of a sudden I noticed that the other half of the taps were cider.
Right, right.
So, well, yeah, let's try some of these. And I mm-hmm. was astounded with the ciders over there. Even a lot of these sort of mass-produced, cheaper ciders, some of them were dry and tannic, you know, mm-hmm. so that really turned me on. But the other thing was I've always been, you know, into foraging wild things mm-hmm. and a gardener, and going out and looking for wild apples has been something. I went to college in Maine in the 90s mm-hmm. and that's when I really kind of every fall started to get into, became a tradition of mine wherever mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. to just go out and look for wild apples in the fall mm-hmm. and but I wasn't really making cider with them.
Were you making beer at any point? Were you
no,
a home brewer?
No, okay. I have no brewing background. I came at this from...
That might be a good thing. Sometimes.
I came at this from an apple and cider perspective, cool. and it was sort of a sudden... It's something that I daydreamed about for years, and then finally an opportunity was planted in front of me with this orchard at a time when other things were sort of falling away in life, and I just said... I'm going to do this. And, you know, 2 weeks later, I had all the books stacked up on my...
and you dove in.
I just dove in. And, you Wonderful. Know, I had done a few carboys here and there of cider. I knew enough about ferment. You know, I had a lot of friends that were making sauerkraut. We were all kind of fermenting various mm-hmm. foods and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm not... This wasn't like a... city boy moving out to the country. I mean, I grew up in the country. My parents were mm-hmm. gardeners and always planting trees and shrubs mm-hmm. and things like that. So mm-hmm. it wasn't that big of a stretch. Learning proper cider making techniques has probably been the biggest,
sure.
the biggest stretch. So yeah.
But here you are, and you have all these yep. apples, and you learned how to prune the apple trees and how
well,
to care for them. Because they're looking in really good shape here, Teddy. I mean, they're, you know, the crowns are really lovely. They're not like, you know, in terms of old apple trees, 92, you know.
Yeah, these are 24
there,
years.
But they look really, what a spot. They just love this spot. It's picture perfect.
It is pretty amazing. Well, these, I can't claim to have mastered pruning at all. I'm thinking that maybe by the time I'm 75, I can say I've mastered it. But that's totally integral to the cider. You know, you read all the books and, well, you know, proper cider making really starts in the orchard, right? I mean, you know, I even knew that before even being over in England, you know, and the bartenders were, well, you know, it's really about how they're grown and how they're harvested. Yeah, you hear that. And the more I do this, the more I realize that's so key and it's so integral. And each, you know, a lot of these are dessert varieties. I'm trying to see which ones can make good cider. And I think a lot of them will, especially grown the way I'm trying to grow them here. The other great asset is that this was unmanaged for 10 years, but Gibb hayed the aisles
okay.
for 10 years.
Yeah.
So if you read in the old books, I read in, I forget what book it is, very old, saying, you know, the downfall of an orchard is if you hay it every year, because you're basically to take, if you're mm-hmm, not mm-hmm. rejuvenating it. But that's been a great asset, because every apple that comes out of here, even the summer apples, are very slow fermenters.
Mm.
Very low nitrogen in this orchard.
And that's perfect for cider making.
That yeah. I discovered yeah. that the first yeah. year I started fermenting apples, and I just sort of, you know, high-fived the night air when I realized that. I mean, the fermentations with these varieties like Liberty... and Golden Russet, they're dragging on for 8 or 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mm-hmm. I got some, occasionally I'll get some fruit from commercial orchards out here, and you know, if I put a cultured yeast to it, bam, 3 weeks.
Nice, nice.
And it's done.
Is that what you're doing? Are you doing cultured yeast or primarily?
Both. Okay. I think I'm going to go all wild at this point. I've mainly been using AWRI 350, which I like.
Why did you choose that one?
Because Andrew Lee talks about it.
Okay. Have you experimented with many other ones?
Yeah. All the usual suspects. Right. The 71B and 118 EC1118 champagne.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One of the other
How'd you like the 71B? I'm kind of a fan of that myself. I call that my easy drinking cider.
Really?
It's just like, boom.
I do like it.
And I think that, I'm going to take a guess, I think that West County, when Terry was alive, that he was using 71B for like the Crown Cider, which they don't make anymore. It was kind of like their introductory cider in many ways for folks.
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong about that, but for some reason, I think that's why I got a little hooked on it.
Yeah. Yep. I've liked it, but also I don't have good temperatures for 71B. Mm-hmm. I did one carboy where I kept the heat. You know, this is when I was tinkering around with the cultured yeast.
Yeah.
And I kept the heater on it, and it was fine. But, you know, then the wild yeast, same must. You know, I would do same must, mm-hmm, but then I'd do EC1118 in one and 71B in another. And I forget. There was a few others that I was experimenting with.
But now you're going for wild. I mean, that's really...
I think so, yeah.
Why the hell not? It's just like so exciting because you have the terroir here.
Yeah.
You have this old orchard in terms of the U.S. for the potential for cider.
Yeah.
Even though it's primarily like culinary. But not.
Yeah, and so of course I'm top. You know, you'll see over there. I'm top working in a few other varieties, and back in my little garden nursery, I'm up to about 150 little whips now. And of course, you know, they're all English and French bittersweets, and some wild apples. So the wild apples are kind of the big. Sort of, they're like the little treasure hunting.
I would have loved to have gone on that ride.
Ah, and that walk will allow me to fill you in, Ciderville, on exactly what Teddy and I are speaking about. You see, when we first made contact via email, he gave me three options. One is we could meet at his cidery, which was a couple miles down the road, and he called it a basement cidery. That probably sounds familiar to a lot of us out there in Ciderville. Or we could go to the orchard, which actually I did decide to, obviously, as you're listening to this chat, which was in or is in Waitsfield, Vermont. And the third one was the one I really wanted to do, but I didn't have enough time. So maybe next time, Teddy. And that was to take a Jeep ride up, I guess, a big old long trail, which he called a bumpy Jeep trail, along some dirt roads to some wild apple groves. And you know, there is nothing I would love more to do than that. But we'll save that for now and head back with Teddy Weber of Tin Hat Cider, based out of Roxbury, Vermont.
Let's keep walking.
Yeah,
we'll
sure.
walk over to the far orchard over here.
Okay. So you're licensed as a cidery in Vermont. That's what is the license called for Vermont for cider makers? Farm winery.
What is it called? They basically follow federal law. So when I called Vermont Department of Liquor Control, they said don't even bother with us until you have all of your federal permitting in place. Mm-hmm. So it's wine, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Everything falls under wine laws, which I assumed it was the same for all states, but I guess it varies.
It could vary. And when did you get that license? When did that all actually...
2013.
Yep. So here we are.
And I just started selling now in 2016.
Great. And that's only in Vermont?
Yeah. Yep.
And when you sell your cider, how is it distributed?
I'm self-distributing right now.
Okay.
So, because beer brewers can't do this in the state of Vermont, they have to go through a distributor. It's kind of convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, farm wineries, or any winery for that matter, can self-distribute. And because mm-hmm. I fall under wine laws, rules and laws, I can self-distribute to any place that has a license to sell
mm-hmm.
alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm basically a licensed producer. And not basically, I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that enables me to get a farmer's market license,
mm-hmm.
which that's very affordable. I forget how much it is, but you know, one permit will get me, I think, a handful of farmer's markets. Actually, I'm just kind of shooting off the top of my head here. I might have something on this.
That's right.
Because I just started selling, so.
Right, and are you selling that in like
750 mil?
Okay.
Yeah. And as far as my long-range plan, originally it was to be all 750 mil bottles. You know, my inspiration originally, going back 10 years now, was people like West County and Farnham Hill, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, suddenly, just within the past few years, all this, you know, the local supermarket went from having, Smith & Forge or something
mm-hmm.
from England and
right.
Farnham Hill, and that was basically it. You know, Woodchuck would
yep.
be in a different section, and now suddenly there's 20 different ciders, and most of them are in cans.
That's right, yeah.
And so I'm not exactly sure the right direction yet for me with this orchard and with the wild apples that I'm bringing in. If I could keep this business 100% regionally local or within the state of Vermont, I'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's possible unless I'm very diversified.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I'm a lot of the places I've been to,
diversified in terms of styles.
Yeah, and product pricing. A lot of the places I've been to in the valley here have said, if you bring us a 16-ounce can or a 12-ounce bottle, we'll move it.
Mm.
You know, restaurants, like that's, they're telling me that that's where the demand is right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm scratching my head thinking, well, I shouldn't say I'm scratching my head. I sit down with a calculator.
That's probably prudent of you.
How can I make this work?
Right.
And I haven't really seen that pan out yet. So every time I go out, I'm looking and seeing what things are selling for and seeing what kind of fruit they're using. So this old tree right here, most likely a wild apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's actually two, or maybe one side of it is a sport or just kind of mutation. There's actually another one right down here. They may not look like much, but this was basically a jungle of brush until I cleared it all out. And these trees produce an immense amount of fruit. And so, you know, a typical dessert apple orchard, whether it's a pick-your-own or, a wholesale operation, you know, one of the things that the extension books will all tell you is, and when the trees flower in May, look for the wild ones on the field edges and cut them right out of there because they're hosts for pests. And I've embraced all of them and gone in and cleared out all the vegetation and said,
so
all right,
happy to hear that.
You're now part of the orchard. These are your friends, and they're going to get the same lime and compost that I'm throwing on everything else.
Yeah. Looks like you might have some other ones in there.
Those are some really old ones that are basically on their final years right now.
Mm.
I don't know if it's worth it to try and free them up or not. But I've been in there looking at their trunks thinking, are these just wild or could they potentially be...
Are they hollow inside?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about all of them, but there's definitely a lot of rot in there.
I don't know if you got to listen to this week's podcast yet with John Bunker.
Oh, I did. Yeah, of course.
Just
this morning, actually.
Wow. Holy
yeah.
crap. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like So much food for thought on that.
Yeah, in fact, there's an old pear tree over here, and I'm not sure what it is, and I'm considering emailing him some pictures later this year to see if he could help identify that.
Nice. And was that part of the original orchard that was planted in 92?
Yeah, well, so those big old trees that you saw by the beehives,
right.
Those are probably 60 or 70 years old. And there's two are Macintosh, very old Macs, which I'm keeping in here. I've actually, you know, at first I thought, Macintosh, I'm just going to top work all those over. But now that I see what they're producing, they're actually pretty high in sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I mean, it's been years. My palate is definitely more developed now, but I remember having West County's Macintosh.
Yes.
And liking it.
Absolutely.
So I don't have very many trees here, but I may try and do a single variety Macintosh.
So that's what you're doing, though. You are blending your apples and making your cider. So
yeah.
Initial blending, fermentation.
Both. I mean, it because there's so many different kinds, and because I'm so small and have limited vessels, some things I'm blending at the press, or I'll say I'll get 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 gallons of something,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then 2 weeks later something else gets ripe,
mm-hmm.
and using wild yeast, chances are 2 weeks later that 40 gallons, nothing's even happening with
that's
it yet,
right.
So I'll add, all right, well, now I got another 20 gallons of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll add it to this. If I can keep them all separate, that's the goal, because then I actually learn something,
Well, like Kurt Shear down in Millstone in Maryland, I mean, that's what he does, all single variety.
In the barrels?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what are you doing? Are you doing barrels or are you doing...
I have a few tanks, stainless tanks.
What are the sizes of those?
500 liters.
Okay.
One 650. Mm-hmm. And then I have half a dozen barrels,
mm-hmm.
old
mm-hmm.
white wine barrels.
Mm-hmm.
More on the way.
Yeah. So what about these trees that we're coming onto now?
Northern Spy, right
okay.
here. The only Northern Spy. See,
mm-hmm.
I have a lot of that. I have one tree of a particular variety.
Again, so did you have a map of these guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a map, and I found that maybe 10-20% of it was inaccurate.
And this was planted because the folks that bought the place, they didn't buy it from original owners necessarily.
No, and they didn't buy it for the orchard. The orchard was really just a side note. So they did sweet cider for a few years.
The people who planted this.
No, the current owners right now,
okay.
Sue and Kid, they did sweet cider just at their farm stand down by the road.
Right.
And they were busy with other things. They had other careers, and the trees were just kind of here.
Well, then what was the history of these guys? Why are they here?
Apparently, they had a cider orchard in mind, and I don't know whether they were talking sweet cider or hard cider.
Right.
It seems to me like it would be sweet cider, but back in 92... So here's an interesting note, is that, particularly in this orchard, this is why I wanted to come over here, because we were just talking about the wild apples,
yes.
right? So there, on the orchard map, there was this apple called Elmore Cider. And I'm thinking, what's this? Because it was about this time of year when I first started, pruning and looking. Gib pulled out these meats. Oh, here's the original maps.
Which is
the owners
right?
left here.
Yep.
So I'm pouring over these maps and looking at the trees, and they're just getting leafed out and flowering. And I'm thinking, what's this Elmore cider? And I'm looking online and I'm looking through all the books and I can't find anything about it. I'm thinking, could this be some awesome lost old American cider
sure,
apple.
Who knows?
Thinking I've found some gem that's growing in this orchard. And so I figured out who the nursery was, where all these trees came from, called the nursery. And the nursery's name is Elmore Roots. And sure enough, the gentleman I spoke with said, yeah, I remember that orchard. I helped plant all those trees. And I said, well, and so I started asking him all these questions about this tree and that tree. And I said, so you got to tell me about this Elmore cider. And he was kind of silent for a while. He said, oh, yeah, Elmore Cider. He said, you know, those folks, they wanted to make cider, so they wanted as much complexity as possible. So Elmore cider, they're all just seedling trees. They're basically all just wild. I said, oh, that explains why they all look a little different.
Wow.
I hadn't seen the fruit yet, you know,
just the shape
of the tree. We'll see some down in here. So I've got all these wild trees growing within the orchard rows. So I just thought, you know, I'm definitely the right guy for this orchard because wild apples have been my little obsession for years, you know. And lo and behold, some of them are pretty good for cider. I'm considering grafting more of one of them.
So he didn't say where these seedlings came from, just...
Yeah, just, you know, who knows, their nursery, they might have been using some seedling stock.
Right.
I'm in my little nursery, I've sprouted over 100 little whips from seed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an experiment. And I've tracked the parents of each one, you know. So I was using apples. I got some Dabinet from another orchard and some Golden Russet. And who knows? You know, that's just a fun little side
note. Yeah. I love standing in this orchard and just seeing the vitality of these trees, knowing that nothing's been done with them for, 10 plus or more
years?
Yeah, well,
past 3 years, I've you know, we've added, even though it doesn't look like it, potash, lime, sulpomag, compost, wood chips, but no big sort of nitrogen-based fertilizers or anything like that. This is all just, you know, so, the lime and the wood chips aren't going to give it much vigor. I'm going for some complexity in the soil and just overall tree health right now. Last year, basically the only thing I sprayed was raw neem oil. And I'm going to continue on that. I did dormant oils. I didn't even get full coverage because we've had such cold weather.
Right.
Just horticultural oils.
You know, I mean, it's good for Ciderville to know that, and it's what John was speaking about on that episode 28, is that you could have that orchard just sitting there waiting to be found.
Yeah.
Or those trees are, and that they could sit dormant for a long time with no care and be brought back. And I actually know a couple orchards that have some amazing cider varieties planted probably, you know, I'm going to say, boy, when I was there, it was in the 90s, so they were probably from the 70s or so. Small dwarf sized Kingston Blacks and things that. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's just sitting there dormant because the folks who bought it don't give a hoot about apples and they're just going wild. And I go by going, somebody. But, you know, as we know, and looking at this orchard, they sometimes maybe that is a blessing in disguise because better that than being cut down and that they can come back.
Yeah.
So
it
happens.
This is a little block of freedoms up here. Disease resistant.
Yep.
Maybe it might have come from one of the Minnesota breeding programs. I'm not sure about that. But not a particularly exciting cider apple, but it's actually been excellent as a base in ice cider. I'm tinkering around with ice cider.
I was wondering if you're doing that. Seeing that you're up in Vermont,
why not?
Yep. Minus 25.
Yep. I brought you a bottle too.
Oh, lovely.
So that's, you know, when I first year, I was thinking, what am I going to do with all these freedom? They produce really well, totally scab resistant, resist fungal disease. They look beautiful. You really don't have to do much to them except keep the plum curculio away from them. So this is one of the things I'm trying to, this is what I'm tinkering around with, you know, rather than tinkering around in the cider room, I'm tinkering around out here with when to harvest and how to harvest. And if I'm gonna use drops only, is that gonna affect how I prune? One thing with a lot of these dessert varieties, you know, they're not like the English bittersweets that are tough or small, or even, you know, the crab apples, the huge crab and things like that just shake right out of the tree and they're tough and they can smack against the ground and they're fine. These tend to, the skin breaks open, they bounce off a branch. And So now you've got a bunch of sort of compromised fruit, and if you want to sweat it for a while, it's not going to last as long because you've got broken skin. So,
but I mean, a lot of cider makers will crush it and let it sit.
Maceration?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to let things. I love them to go as long as they can go. Get them as mealy as they can, as ripe as they can. I've just found with these dessert varieties and the way they're grown in this orchard, that the better cider comes from that. So with these Freedoms, I leave them on the tree as long as possible, especially since they're going for ice cider. In fact, mm-hmm. they actually will hold in the trees well into December. And not all, you know, maybe 30% will drop to the ground. So I come through before the coyotes get through here as much as possible,
yeah,
and pick up as many drops as I can. And so basically, so I'm using cryo extraction and cryo concentration. So I'll let them freeze on the tree.
Well, why don't we just say what those two things are just for folks out in Ciderville who have no idea?
Sure.
So cryo extraction, you would explain as...
getting the juice directly. What is the difference? You're getting the juice directly from a frozen apple. So you're basically, you're freezing the apple and then you're pressing the apple when it's partially thawed so that you're getting, so the water content stays in the apple. And then cryo concentration is where you press is like you'd normally press, and then you freeze the juice.
Right.
So I'll get my first round of concentration straight off the apples.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a mixture of, you know, there's a wild apple down here. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of the wild apples are, they've got nice high acidity.
Mm-hmm.
And are late ripeners. So they've actually been perfect for ice cider. At least in the small quantities that I'm mm-hmm. getting blended mm-hmm. in with mm-hmm. the Freedoms. So some of them hang in the tree, you know, they would stay there till February if I let them. Some don't. So I'll come through, same with the Freedoms, I'll pick up drops. So I'll get a bunch of bushels and I store them in an outdoor shed. And so they're basically being left outside, but I'm beginning to really agree with Christian... you know who I'm talking about, right? I forget it. He's up in Quebec.
Oh, yes. Who was kind of like Claude?
Well, Claude Jacquelier talks about him all the time.
He's, right. Well, Christian is... I know Christian's last name. It doesn't come to me.
Starts with a B.
Yeah.
But I can never pronounce it.
It's a long name.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's kind of like known as like that... really a key...
Right.
The key person in like the
yes.
Canadian
Well,
ice
so
cider.
He swears that when you leave the apples in the tree... that the wind and the sun, it changes things. It does, it's different than harvesting the fruit and then allowing it to freeze
mm-hmm.
outside.
Mm-hmm.
And after just 3 winters of tinkering around with this, I would definitely agree with that.
Agree.
There's something about these apples that hang in the trees that you can taste it and smell it in the must. It's a totally different ball of wax.
So are you saying then by leaving them on the trees, it's the way that you want to go?
That's the way I want to
go. Okay, all right.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it's. I think sometimes as humans, we try to like make it work in our framework when the apple already has their own scene going.
Yeah.
And you know, we just have to pay attention to what the tree is telling you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and with the ice cider, again, that's not a major focus. It's just sort of the fun little thing to keep me busy in January and February. I don't think, unless I really propagate a bunch of these varieties that hold their fruit, apparently that's what they've done in Quebec, is they've identified a few of these varieties
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
they hold the fruit
mm-hmm.
to the tree. You know, I'd have to plant a lot of those to really make this viable, because you're concentrating, you know, what is it? I mean, 30%.
Yes,
of
it
the
takes a lot. Like out of 15 gallons, you only get 3 gallons of juice to go and ferment.
Yeah.
Then, so yeah.
Yep. So right now, it's just a fun little side note, and again, I'm all about at the moment, I'm all about diversifying what I'm doing, even at a small scale. It definitely makes things challenging with ordering bottles and getting reasonable prices on labels and things like that. So I'm figuring out how to streamline all that as I move forward.
So what ciders then are you making? You have the ice cider, but you're using these hodgepodge of apples and kind of culinary apples with that have some good probably acid base in it. And are they really bright ciders? Is that how you describe the ciders?
Yeah, right around 7 grams per liter malic, dry, bottle conditioned. That's my first cider.
Nice, nice.
So acid is definitely a challenge for sure. So I definitely need some lower acid apples here. I don't think I've really achieved any really significant malolactic fermentations in any of my batches, in any of the wild batches. I have big hopes for this summer because I've got the basement cellar, the cellar set up in a different in a way to allow the temperature to come up a little bit, and I've got these barrels that had Chardonnay in them, which supposedly went through MLF. So I'm hoping that maybe there's something in that wood that will help.
And I just want to say MLF being malolactic fermentation.
Malolactic fermentation.
So that's kind of the question there. Because, again, I just came from Farnham Hill, talking to those folks there. And, you know, everybody kind of has their own style. When they first started out, they were saying, you know, we're going to make that southwestern UK type of cider. And they're really going in that direction. Probably a lot more, you know, maceration and... And now if you tasted their early ciders, that's definitely where they were shooting for. If you taste their ciders now, you're not going to get that same profile at all. It's going to be like a really great, easy drinking cider that you'd have with any dinner. And it's not, it's not necessarily farmy or anything. Yeah. So what are you looking for in your style? Are you still finding your way? But if you had your druthers, you know, what would you like?
I'm still finding my way, but, you know, my background being a musician, I definitely fall into that camp I want the flexibility to, if I was soliciting investors right now and they want to say, what's your brand going to be? That's a more assertive way of asking what you were just asking. I have to admit, I'd be a little wishy-washy about it because I want the freedom to experiment a little bit. And so right now, what drew me to this, it's funny that I'm tinkering around with ice cider because I wanted nothing to do with any ciders that had any sweetness to them when I got it. I thought, I'm going to make a dry cider. And that's it. I'm just going to focus on dry ciders. And that's still basically, even though I've got the fruit to do, you know, multiple rackings, slow fermentation, I really could make a cider with a little bit of residual sugar. And I may start to tinker around with that. I mean, I am on a very small scale just for educational purposes. But really, it's the dry ciders. Ice cider, even though it's got the intense residual sweetness, it's just a different thing.
Totally,
it's a different product.
Yeah, it is. And you could get that, of course, Vermont is well known for Eden cider, ice cider, which is just insanely delicious. And, on the barrels, and they've won multiple awards because it brings cider drinkers into like a whole different level than your, 5.0% ABV. You're really kicking it up, and it's a deeper intensity. It's like you're sitting in the apple core, you know, having a party in a very different way. So, you know, I think what's interesting, well, actually I want to ask you this question. What instruments do you play, or what instruments do you play?
Because
that might tell a lot about a person right there.
Maybe I shouldn't divulge. I trumpet was my first.
Wow.
And guitar, steel guitar. I'm sort of a jack of numerous trades.
And what kind of music did you
A variety, but mainly Americana, sort of roots-based American music.
And did you do that in the U.S. and over in Europe?
Yeah.
Should I know what band that you were in?
No, probably not.
No? You're just going to hold that back, or?
Well, no, I'm not. I'm just.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't
but
know.
A variety of bands. My main band was the Wiles. Yeah. So anyway, that's another. You know, that's just another life.
Yeah.
But it definitely. You know, when you ask what's my style, what am I going for? I think of Duke Ellington. You know, would if it sounds good, it is good.
If you ain't got that swing.
That's kind of my mantra in the cellar is if it tastes good, it is good.
Sure does taste good. Thank you so much, Teddy Weber of Tin Hat Cider in Vermont. This kind of conversation is what we call evergreen, in that it never grows old. I could be out in an orchard 20 years from now with another up-and-coming cider maker who's bringing back an old orchard and have the same kind of chat. And I really enjoy that because it's something that a lot of folks are wrangling with right now in Ciderville, kind of managing all the different varieties, maybe just having apples that are growing regionally in their neck of the woods and not necessarily considered cider apples or peri pears. It's all good in the end, and that is what we love about these kind of chats. I'd like to offer up a big shout out and thank you to Current Cider, who has been an ongoing supporter of the Cider Going Up campaign, which you can find a link to at ciderchat.com. That's for folks in the cider trade and commercial cideries who find this chat informative and are willing to do a little kickback to keep it rolling along. Current Cider is based in Percocet, Pennsylvania, and will soon be in Fishtown, an area of Philadelphia that's very up and coming. So if you're heading out that way, probably later this summer, I suspect, 2017, you have a good chance of maybe finding Current Cider there. It's going to be a good opening. And I'll be talking to Joe Getz, the cider maker there, next week and recording an upcoming chat with him. I can't wait to get filled in on all the details. And also a thank you to the fine folks who support this chat via the Cider Chat Patreon page. Individuals out there in Ciderville who are just saying, you know what, I could kick over $3 a month or $5 a month for this podcast and keep Rhea's head above water. Oh, yeah. Well, it ain't easy, folks. So if you could come that way and join in, not only do you help this podcast, again, you will be submitted into that giveaway for the 2 tickets to the Cider Circus this August in Colorado. And speaking of the Cider Circus, well, the 2 folks who put that on also run the Gypsy Cider Company in Tennessee. And that's where we're going to be heading to next week on Cider Chat. And if you're not subscribed by now to this podcast, please do via iTunes. In the meanwhile, I hope you keep on loving it out there. This is Rhea Wincaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!